Good morning. Welcome to our weekly Halacha Shiur. I apologize for not being here for the past few weeks. Unfortunately, I had pneumonia. Baruch Hashem, getting out of it. Chasdei Shamayim, our Rosh Hashiva, Rav Shalom Arashlita, has returned from America. He returned last night. They will be a Shiur today at 12 o'clock with a Rav downstairs in the shul. Today we're going to start speaking about probably the most interesting topic in Hilchos Shemitah. We're not going to be using the book. You can close it. We will be giving a series of shiurim explaining the whole concept and argument around the Heter Mechira, which is the sugya of Shemitah. And unfortunately, the sugya has become more political than halachic. And we will explain that. But today we're going to give the introduction of what Heter Mechira is. It's very interesting, but the Shulchan Aruch, even though he lived a large portion of his life in Eretz Yisrael, and he was the chief rabbi of Tzfat, living there with many of the great Talmidei Chachamim of that time, the Shulchan Aruch does not write any chapter concerning the halachas of Shavis. Doesn't exist. The only place the Shulchan Aruch speaks about Shavis is inside, in Yoredea, in chapter Shin Lamed Aleph, 331, which is one of the longest and most intricate chapters in Yoredea, which deals with Tumot and Masot. Inside that chapter, the Shulchan Aruch relates to certain things regarding Shavis. In the Bes Yosef, in Yoredea Siman Shin Lamed Aleph, he also speaks briefly about Shavis. Many of the later sages that came after the Shulchan Aruch discussed this question and asked, why did the Shulchan Aruch not write a special chapter concerning the halachas of Shavis? He lived here in Eretz Yisrael. Not only that, the Shulchan Aruch has got several books that he wrote. Rabbi Yosef Karo wrote several books. He wrote the Bes Yosef, which is an interpretation on the Torah. He wrote the Shulchan Aruch, which is supposed to be a short briefing and summary of what he wrote in the Bes Yosef. But there are also two other major books that he wrote. One is called the Kesef Mishneh, which is an interpretation on the Rambam. And in the Kesef Mishneh, he does relate to Hilchos Shavis, because the Rambam himself has got a whole section dedicated to Hilchos Shavis. The Shulchan Aruch has a fourth book called Shu'at Avkat Rochel. Those were halachic correspondence that he had with other Torah sages in his time. And in that shu'at, he has four different answers. Four tshuvas where he relates to the whole concept of Shavis. Now, we can see that it was part of the life then in Eretz Yisrael. The Shulchan Aruch related to it. He answered, he had a lot of arguments with one of the great Torah sages of his age, known as the Mabit, Rabbi Moshe ben Yosef Tirani, who was considered in the time of the Shulchan Aruch just as great as the Shulchan Aruch. They too were the biggest sages in Tzfat, the biggest halachic authorities then. And he had an argument with him, and you can see the Shulchan Aruch relates to the whole concept of Shavis, and relates to what's going on, but he doesn't write a single chapter in the Shulchan Aruch itself about it. That's a question. Many poskim debate about it, and they discuss why didn't he write. Let's come to the Heter Mechira. What does the Heter Mechira mean? Heter Mechira means that I am selling the land to a goy. Now, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't relate to it in any single place in the Shulchan Aruch. Are you allowed to sell your land to a goy in Shavis? But he does relate to it on a different issue. In Or HaChaim, in Siman Taf Mem Chet, 448, the Shulchan Aruch there discusses selling your chometz to a goy on Pesach. We know that the Torah tells us that a Jew is not allowed to own chometz during the 7 days of Pesach. The two isurim, bal yira'e, you're not allowed to see the chometz, or bal yimatze, you're not allowed to own chometz. What happens if, unfortunately, a Yid did not get rid of his chometz, and he did have chometz over Chag HaPesach? Chachomim, in that case, dictate that the chometz is, you're forbidden to eat the chometz. It's a knas. Now, why is this important to know? We're gonna shift a bit. Many people make this mistake every single year. Unfortunately, there are many stores in Eretz Yisrael here who do not sell their chometz. It is mostly in gas stations. We know that today every single gas station, and that is also by law. By law, every single gas station today has got to have a small shop next to the gas station where you can both go and get coffee, energy drinks, something to eat. So much so, they're now going to pass a law that during the hours of 6 and 12, you're going to be able to get a cup of coffee in those stores for 1 shekel only. Why? To make sure that drivers who are tired can have a stop and get, for a very cheap price, a cup of coffee to refresh themselves. Unfortunately, many of these gas station shops do not sell their chametz. Now, what's the problem? Imagine if you're now traveling up north a week after Pesach, and you suddenly feel hungry. You stop at a gas station, which is not a gas station, unfortunately, owned by a Shabbos-preserving Jew, and he did not sell his chametz. And you go there, and you want to buy a bisli. You get a bisli which says on it, Mehadrin, by the badatz of the Eid HaChavedis. It's absolutely glatt kosher. You're not allowed to buy it. Why? Because if that bisli was in the shop before Pesach, and it was not sold to a goy, it was owned by the Jew during Pesach, you are not allowed to eat the bisli. Therefore, after Pesach, whenever you go to a place which does not have a good kashrus, does not have good supervision, you have to look at the product and see when was it manufactured. And only if it's manufactured after Pesach can you then get it. It makes no difference if it's got the kashrus of Badat Seyda Haredis, of Rav Rubin, of Rav Landau. Makes no difference. Chometz that was owned by a Jew during the 7 days of Pesach and was not burnt, on, he didn't get rid of it in a different manner, you're not allowed to eat the chametz. Now, the Shulchan Aruch comes, and he now deals with a big problem that existed also in his time. And we're going to explain how it changed in our times. Imagine if in the time of the Shulchan Aruch, I am a massive manufacturer and owner of wheat, of barley, or of different grains. I have incredibly large warehouses that are full of grain. I can't get rid of that grain before Pesach. We're talking here about millions and millions and millions of dollars. I can't burn it. It doesn't exist. What do I do? The Shulchan Aruch says there's a very simple solution. Sell your chametz to a goy. You do a sale, and how does the sale go? Let's take, for example, a goy. We'll call the goy, for the name of the safekeeping, we'll call him Ivan. Okay? I now go to Ivan, and I say to Ivan, listen, I have chametz that is more or less valued by, let's say, 50 million shekel. Large sum of money. Please give me 100 shekel, okay? This is the first payment. We're now going to write a contract. During the 7 days of Pesach, if you want to come and give me the remaining money, the remaining 50 million shekel, no problem. Give me the money, everything belongs to you. If you do not give me the money within 8 days, that means that you're not interested in finalizing the sale. You're going to sell me back the chametz. In other words, we're going to make sure we're not going to say that the whole sale was annulled. We're just going to say that you're not interested in this transaction. And therefore, you're going to return me the money. And the chametz belongs to me. But during those 7 days of Pesach, the chametz belonged to Ivan. Why? Because Ivan paid 100 shekel. And that was considered to be the initial payment. And halachically, that applies as a sale. You see, if I go and buy something from the shop, even though, let's say I want to buy this watch, and the watch costs 150 shekel, I don't have 150 shekel, and I give the owner of the shop, I give him 10 shekel. The sale, the transaction, is now actually a true and solid transaction. The watch is mine. I still have to pay him the remaining 140 shekel. That doesn't mean that there's no transaction. That's what one does in Mechiras Chometz. Once upon a time, in the times of the Shulchan Aruch, it only applied to people who were big manufacturers, people who owned warehouses. It didn't apply to the standard person in the street. Why? Because 400 years ago, they did not know how to preserve food the way we know how to preserve food today. There weren't any fridges. There weren't factories. They didn't have the ability of drying the grains and the food that we have today. Today, in our reality, every single person in his house has got a lot of chametz products which are worth a nice and large sum of money. We have pasta, we have soup nuts, we have biscuits, we have crackers. The reality that we have today is every single person owns a large, in his house, he has a lot of chametz which he does not know what to do with during Pesach. Now, some people are machmir, they take everything and they burn it. I heard from the Mordechai Eliyahu Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and he paskens that for a person who it is considered to be a hefsed merubah, a great loss of losing all the chametz products in his house, he's allowed to sell the chametz lekatchila to a goy. What is considered to be a large loss? He said, for an avrech, it's 50 shekel. 50 shekel is a large sum of money for most of us. It's not a sum of money. Now, if we found 50 shekel in the street, oh, Baruch Hashem, that's very nice. Thank you very much, Hashem. 50 shekel for ash is a large sum of money. Most of us have in our houses chometz products that are worth at least 50 shekel. If you take all the pastas, all the soup nuts, all the crackers, all the biscuits, all the wafers, those of us who have wafers, all the frozen bread that we keep in our freezer that we're able to now preserve things that did not exist 400 years ago, it comes to more than 50 shekel. So today, most Yidden go and sell the chometz to a goy. So much so that it's become already today in every shul you have a gabbai who sells chometz for some, for one or other kashrus organization. It's very simple. You go to him, you fill in the details, sign your name, kol tuv, and you've sold the chometz. Now, even though the Shulchan Aruch paskins you're allowed to sell the chometz, not everyone agrees with the Shulchan Aruch. The Gra, then Siman Tzaf Mem Chet, paskins that you're not allowed to sell the chometz because the Gra says this is not a real sale. Why isn't this a real sale, says the Gra? The Gra says, in reality, you and I both know that Ivan is not going to pay me the whole sum of money. Ivan is not going to buy the whole sum of chometz. He's not going to buy all the chometz. And at the end of Pesach, after 8 days, the chometz is going to return to be mine. Says the Gra, that is not a real sale. And therefore, according to the Gra, you're not allowed to sell the chometz. Now, most poskim, Ashkenazim and Sfarim, disagree with the Gra. Most of them hold that you are allowed to sell the chometz. Many people ask, I don't understand. How can I, so to speak, mislead HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How can I try and trick the halacha? If the Torah says you're not allowed to have chometz, how can I do these, all these like different, you know, I don't know what to call it, tricks, dishonest actions of, as if selling the chometz to a goy so I don't have the ism. I heard once a beautiful interpretation from one of my rabbis. 25 years ago, a lawyer was caught speeding on the bridge of Lachun. Now, I don't know if you know where Lachun is. Lachun is a bit down south. There's a big memorial area there for Chel HaShiryon. He was caught speeding on Kirish Lachun. He was taken to court. Searching the country's archives, he found that Latourne at that time, we're talking about the 80s, still belonged legally to Britain, to mandatory Britain. And therefore he claimed, with all due respect, the laws of the State of Israel do not apply on the bridge of Latourne. I was caught on the bridge of Latourne. Latourne belongs, according to law, to Britain, not to Israel. And therefore Israel's laws do not apply. He was right. The law was changed the next week. And the bridge of Latourne was annexed by the government of Israel, was declared as part of the State of Israel. Now that obviously is a trickery that the government did not plan. The government obviously, from her point of view, if you speed anywhere in the State of Israel, you're going to be punished. It didn't plan for the bridge of Lachun to be part of mandatory Britain and therefore for the laws there not to apply. When we're speaking about human laws, we can speak about trickery. We can speak about fooling the law. How can you speak about such a concept when we're speaking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu laws? HaKadosh Baruch Hu wisdom is infinite. There's nothing that we can think of that HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself did not think of. We cannot trick HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you really think that you can trick Hashem, you've got a serious problem. Because your problem is one of two. You either do not realize what Hashem is, or you do realize what Hashem is, and you think that you're also Hashem. One of the two, you have a serious problem. You can't trick Hashem. So what's the explanation? The explanation is very simple. Hashem Yisborach knew that over the generations, reality is going to change. And Hashem himself built, in the halachic law, loopholes for us to be able to utilize them simply because he knew reality is going to change and we're going to need to use them. Let's give an example. Heter Iska. What is the Heter Iska? Heter Iska is a concept that allows a person to take a loan with interest. 400 years ago, that applied only to people who were big salesmen, big merchants, who needed to take large-scale loans. It didn't apply to every single one of us, and therefore, not many poskim discussed Heter Iska. Today, when we have the reality of banks, and when you go into an overdraft, the bank charges you a sum of money of interest for being an overdraft, there's not one person who has a bank account who doesn't use a Heter Iska. We all have to use that concept to allow us to be able to run our lives properly in modern day society in year 2014. So today a heter iska is a loophole that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put within the laws of Hilchos Ribbis to allow us to be able to live properly in modern society. Same thing with the Mechiras Chometz. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who created that loophole, knowing that in 2014 the reality is going to change. Every single Jew is going to own at least 50 shekel worth more or more products of Chometz that are in his house. And for him to burn them, it's considered to be a big loss, something that he can't do on a daily basis. And therefore, all those trickeries, so-called, are loopholes that Hashem himself built within the halachic code to allow us to live in modern society. Because the most important thing the Torah tells us is, v'chai bahim, v'lo shi'amut bahim. The laws of Torah are supposed to allow us to live a proper, full, and satisfying life in the world that we live today. We cannot ignore what goes on around us. Now, let's get back to the Heter Mechira of Shviz. We explain the concept of Mechiras Chometz, how do you sell Chometz? The same concept itself was applied for coping with the problem of Shviz. Now, the Heter Mechira is something very ancient. The first one who used this concept was a book called Tzvor Hamor. He was the chief rabbi of Hebron. And this is the rabbi who lived 300 years ago, Reb Mordechai Rubio. And he himself is the one who first thought of this concept. What does the concept of Heter Mechira mean? The Torah tells us that on the seventh year, a land that is owned by a Jew, you're not allowed to plow, you're not allowed to sow, you're not allowed to do agricultural work in the land because the land has got to rest. What happens if the land is not owned by a Jew? What happens if the land is owned by a non-Jew? Let's give an example. Imagine if I now have a house in the Givat Zofatit. You know the Givat Zofatit neighborhood? Unfortunately, the Givat Zofatit is suffering from a big problem. Many Arabs are moving into that neighborhood and buying houses. Let's say that I am, unfortunately, a weak-minded Jew, and I am unable to say no to selling my house to an Arab, because it's a big halachic problem. We discussed this also relating to Heter Mechira. And I have a nice house in the Givat Zofatit with a garden. And an Arab came to me, he wants to sell my, he wants to buy my house. We do a 100% legal transaction with a lawyer, with a tabu, everything. He gives me a nice sum of money, and I sell him my house with my garden. Now comes the seventh year. That garden. Is the Arab allowed to do things in that garden which are against the halachas of Shviz? Is he allowed to plant? Is he allowed to plow? Is he allowed to sow? What happens? Now this issue was the biggest machloikas between the Beis Yosef, the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Karo, and his best friend, the Mabit, Rabbi Moshe ben Yosef Mitirani. The Mabit said, excuse me, with all due respect, the holiness of the land of Israel is something divine. Hashem stated, the land of Israel is holy. And one of the ramifications of the holiness of the land of Israel is that on the seventh year, there are things in the land you're not allowed to do. It's irrelevant whether the land belongs to a Jew or to a non-Jew. In either way, the laws of Shviz have to apply. Which means, even if a non-Jew bought land from a Jew, you're not allowed to do all the things forbidden on Shviz, irrelevant who owns the land. The Beis Yosef said, absolutely not. The Torah says that when are we supposed to preserve the laws of Shviz? In a land, in Eretz Yisrael, that belongs to a Jew. But if the land belongs to a non-Jew, the laws of Shviz do not apply. Now, what's one of the most common ramifications of that? Shumis and Masus. We know that on Shviz, all the agricultural produce, you're not supposed to give Trumas and Masras from that agricultural produce. Why? Because on Shviz, everything is Hefka. You don't give Trumas and Masras in Hefka. But on other years, you do give Trumas and Masras. If the non-Jew. Let's take, for example, that example I gave you about the non-Jew, the Arab, okay, we'll call the Arab Ahmed. Ahmed, who bought my house in the Givat Zofatit. And he now has a garden. And in that garden, he planted tomatoes and cucumbers, okay? And now, he has come and he has sold me his tomatoes and cucumbers. Do I have to do trumas and masros on them? Tomatoes and cucumbers that grew in the seventh year. According to the Mabit, no, not at all. The land has got the holiness of Shavis on it. Whether it belongs to Ahmed or whether it belongs to me, I'm exempt of doing trumas and masros on those tomatoes and those cucumbers. According to the Beis Yosef, the minute I sold him the land, the Kedusha Shavis dissipated, annulled, disappeared, finished. Doesn't have Kedusha Shavis anymore. It's just like a regular land all and on all other years. Therefore, if he sells me his tomatoes and cucumbers, I do have to do trumas and masros for them. That's one of the ramifications. Most poskim, and when I mean most, I'm talking about 99%, held, according to the Beis Yosef, that if a non-Jew bought the land from me, it has got no Kedusha Shavis anymore. The poskim who agreed with the Mabit and said that even when a non-Jew buys the land, it still has Kedusha Shavis, was the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish held halachas like the Mabit. Some say, we know that the Gra, in his later years, wanted to come to Eretz Yisrael. He wanted to make Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. For some mysterious reason, no one knows why, in the middle of the way, the Gra turned around and returned to Vilna. No one knows why. There are many interpretations. One of them says that the Gra held according to the Mabit. That the Mabit says that if you sell a land to a non-Jew, it still has on it the Kedusha Shavis. And the Gra therefore didn't want to come to Eretz Yisrael. Why? In Eretz Yisrael, a Cheirim was declared that anyone that passes like the Mabit is going to be under the Cheirim. The Beis Yosef declared a Cheirim. In other words, if you buy agricultural produce from a non-Jew in the year of Shavis, you have to give from it Trumas and Masros. That was the Pesik of the Beis Yosef. And if you don't do that, you're under Cheirim. Now, the Chazon Ish, he himself didn't regard that Cheirim for his own reasons. All other poskim did. And the Gra, who was afraid of the Cheirim, therefore decided he doesn't want to go to Eretz Yisrael, he doesn't want to get into this Machloikis, he's going back to Vilna. Now, that's one of the interpretations why the Gra went back to Eretz Yisrael. Okay. According to the Mabit and the Chazon Ish, selling your land to a Goy on Shavis Hetzimichira doesn't even start. There's no point in selling your land to Ahmed or to Ivan. Why? Because even if you sell them the land, the Kedusha Shavis still applies. Nothing changed whether I own the land or whether Ahmed or Ivan own the land. The land is still got Kedusha Shavis. There's still things you're not allowed to do. And if you do them, you're doing a Nisa. Big problem. So according to the Mabit and the Chazon Ish, the whole question of Heter Mechira doesn't even start. The question starts according to the Beis Yosef, who holds that if I sell my land to a non-Jew, the Kedusha Shavis doesn't apply anymore. It's just like a regular land, and therefore you are allowed to plow, you are allowed to sow, you are allowed to plant. Okay. So far we're talking about a permanent sale, which means when I sold my house to Ahmed in the Givat Zofatit with a garden, and I sold him my house forever. I wasn't selling it to him for 1 year. What happens when I'm selling Ahmed my land for only 1 year? I mean, we all know that Ahmed is not going to be able to buy my land. Now, why is that? How does Heter Mechira work? The state of Israel is very afraid that the Arabs are going to actually try and buy all the land. It's not in the interest of the state of Israel for half of Israel to be owned by Saudi Arabia, correct? So what do they do in the contract? In the contract, they write like this. Normally, how much would you sell a square meter in Yerushalayim? Now, Yerushalayim is very expensive. Let's say a square meter is sold for $5,000. In the Heter Mechira note, it's written that every square meter is going to be sold for $5 billion. Which means, even if Saudi Arabia killed every single member of Saudi Arabia selling their kidneys, lungs, and brains and hearts, which is not a bad thing at all, and it could be a very good thing, and we're pro and we're for that, and even if they sold all their lands, and all their gold, and all their oil, they'll never have enough money to buy the land in Eretz Yisrael. Now, some might say, well, that's ridiculous, that's not a real sale. I mean, if you're pricing it at such a high price, that's not a real sale. Wrong. logically, you might be correct. Halachically, you're wrong. Why are you wrong halachically? Halachically, I am allowed to sell whatever I want, with whatever conditions, and for whatever price I want. And if you are willing to buy it from me, that's your problem, not my problem. I can, for example, take this pen and say to you, listen, I am selling this to you for $1 million. You want to buy it from me? Please. I'd be very happy. You'd help me very much. You want to buy it from me? That's your decision. I am allowed to price this pen at whatever price I want. I'm allowed to save in more store. I'm selling you this pen on one condition. That whenever you use it, you have to wear a pink sombrero and you have to dance with a hula hoop. That's the condition. Now, do I need to be hospitalized? Yes, I do. I've got mental issues, obviously, if those are my conditions. But am I allowed to say those are my conditions? I'm allowed to say them. And if you want to buy it under those conditions, you are obligated, whenever you use this pen, to put a pink sombrero on your head and to dance around with a hula hoop. That's your problem. So therefore, halachically, we are allowed to price, to give a price on the land, as ever, as to overprice it to whatever extent that we want. But the question is, since everyone knows that at the end of the year, Ahmed is not going to be able to fulfill the transaction. He's not going to be able to give me all the money. And the lands are going to go back to the Jew who owned them. Is that considered to be a real sale? Why so? The difference between Mechiras Chometz and between Heter Mechira and Sharis is, in Mechiras Chometz, I don't care if Ahmed comes and gives me 50 million. Imagine if I am now the company of Osim, and all my chometz is valued at 200 million shekel. And Ahmed comes and gives me 200 million shekel and says, I want to buy your chometz. As a business owner, I'd say, fine, okay, you know, you want to buy your chometz? Not bad, you know, I can give good dividends to all my share owners. No problem, take the chometz, sell it. When I sell my chometz, I don't care if the non-Jew will afterwards come and want to fulfill the transaction. But when I sell my land, both me and him know that I'm not interested in selling my land. And even if I'm interested in selling my land, the state of Israel will not allow me to sell my land because it is a national interest for the lands to be owned by Jews and not by Arabs. So we both know that none of us really want this transaction. Does that apply in that case? The last problem, and with that we're going to finish the shiur today. Unfortunately, as we all know, Arabs do have a tendency, a serious tendency of stealing. The Midrash says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to give the Ishmaelim the Torah, he said to them, they asked him, what does it say in it? He said, Lo tignov. And they said, oh, sorry, don't steal, that's too difficult for us. We can't fulfill the Torah. Why am I saying this? For over 300 years, in Israel here, Israel was ruled under the Ottoman Empire, which are the ancestors of today's Turks. The Ottoman Empire was an extremely corrupt empire. In those times, owning a land was proved by having a paper called a kushan. Now, how did things work 200 years ago? Imagine if I am a very rich Arab, and next to me is a Jew who has a very nice vineyard, and I want his vineyard. And I go to him and I say to him, you know, David, please sell me your vineyard. And he says to me, absolutely not. What do? I go to the royal official who's in charge of our district. I take out a bag full of gold coins. I put it on the table and I say to him, I'd really like to buy the land of David. Can you help me? Of course he can. He takes the bag, pockets it. The next day, a group of soldiers, of Ottomanian soldiers come, run David off his land. 2 days later, that imperial official has given the rich Arab a kushan, an official paper stating that he has bought the land. What's the problem? Halachically, many of those papers are false. And according to halacha, you can never ever steal land. Land is never stolen. There's never Yoshin land. If you stole my great-great-great-grandfather's land 500 years ago, 500 years later, I can come and demand for you to return me the land. There's no Yosh. Land can never be stolen. Which means another problem is many lands here, which are so-called owned by Arabs, we don't know if they really are owned by Arabs. or if 200, 300 years ago the Arabs stole them from the Jews who owned them, which is another problem, which many of the lands today which are called Arab lands, we don't know whether they are Arab lands. So that's another problem with the Hetzer Mechira, doing it properly, making sure that it is a real transaction. Now, we've just started going into the issue of Hetzer Mechira. We've just seen some of the problems. Be'ezras Hashem, next week, we'll continue speaking about it. We'll also be speaking about Otzah Beis Din, and eventually we'll reach the conclusion, what am I supposed to buy when I go shopping? Until next week, Be'ezras Hashem, may we all have a wonderful, healthy week filled with Torah and Emunah. And there's now starting the Shia of the Rosh Yeshiva downstairs in the shul. Goldie.
Thank you very much.